You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. It's your two hosts, your two favorite hosts, your two only hosts, really, Dan and Jason. How are we doing today, Jason?
Yeah, pretty good. Holiday, so everybody's in the house, and it is frigid out. I stepped outside. The wind is howling, and it feels like minus 27. So I don't know how much we're going to be moving around. But the girls have basketball practice and tumbling, so we will have to get out at some point.
Yeah, it's crazy. My space heater here in my office, it cannot keep up with how cold it is. And I mean, this space heater should work in this small environment, but it's saying it's 60 degrees in my office right now, 61. And of course, I did all the construction in this office myself. So my office is above my garage. So I have to go into my garage. It's basically a loft for storage, and I turned it into my office. And so the drywall looks like shit. I'm sure I didn't do the insulation like I probably should. And, when you can put your hand over top of the electrical outlets and you can feel cold air just like getting sucked into your office, it was a DIY job.
Hey man, I can't say much on my end either, because I got a 150-year-old house that I redid the whole inside. It was stripped down, there's days like this where you can feel the wind inside.
Oh yeah.
And now, like, we got this addition being built on the north side of the house, and of course, everything with contractors is just honestly a joke, but we have no heat in that addition yet, and there's like two points of contact that are, I mean, they have them boarded and insulated kind of, I don't know, it's just a lot of frustration with that. But hey, winter's cold, so endure it, I guess.
Yeah, that's a fact.
It
makes you think a little bit, like, everybody's like, how tough these animals are. We talk about deer and how tough they are, and now outside across the northern Midwest, we're talking the high today is going to be -1 plus a brutal wind. So we're talking about -15 to 20 degrees with wind chill. Then you say these animals are tough, because just imagine, even if you had crazy insulation on, you've been out there before in the tree stand hunting. Granted, in a tree stand, you're going to be more cold than you are if you're in a ground blind or if you're tucked into a bush somewhere on the ground, because there's a little insulation with, just the earth.
Right.
But just, no matter what, you're still getting cold. These animals are out here days. They don't go back to a truck to warm up. And it's just absolutely crazy what Mother Nature can endure on all levels. It blows my mind.
Yeah, no, it is crazy. It's something to go outside and have that dry cold and no wind. And then you factor in a wind, or you factor in getting wet. And I mean, just simply going out and filling the water tanks for the cows or the horse or whatever, if you have to bust any sort of ice for animals, if you have chores like that and you get wet, I mean, just that wet cold is 10 times worse. And then you throw the wind on top of it. That's not any fun.
Right.
It's literally, I mean, we discussed it yesterday. We all got in the car to go to church, and it was, I think we can move to Florida at any point now.
Well, now that the hunting season is over,
I don't need any cold weather, right?
No.
I'm okay with a little bit of snow. I feel, you know, from a Iowa farming background and from a deer, you know, for the love of deer, I feel like we could use a little bit more mild snow cover throughout the course of the winter to get a little bit more moisture in the ground for, you know, for farmers and for food plots and just for the overall health. Iowa had been in a drought, and I know Northern Illinois and, you know, up into the west and south of us had been in a bit of a drought. I think that's all been slowly chipped away. The drought conditions.
Yeah, I think so.
And so just a little bit more moisture in the ground would bring that up. And I think here's a good topic that maybe we should, you know, I want to talk about the end of the Illinois season here. But while we're on this topic, talk to me about what you have seen from antler development and herd health over the years when we have mild winters and we have, like, not necessarily soaking wet flood condition springs, but wet springs that grow lots of vegetation,
natural browse,
all that stuff, and what the outcome of that is.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if we can have a mild winter and your herd health is pretty good, you're not losing bucks or does, you know, and we can go into a spring where we're going to have lush green food vegetation, you name it, come on up, and the farmers are able to get their crops in. I think it's huge as far as antler development. Now, if we go back to 3 or 4 years where we've been struggling on and off back and forth with the drought, I mean, we were as low as -8-9 inches as far as moisture. You know, that to me, we might have lacked, I don't know if antler development, if they would lose 10% of their antlers because of a drought year, or or if maybe they just don't grow near as much at all. Maybe they only put on a couple inches as far as that goes. But it also affects their bodies too. You know, I mean, because if we have a drought season and then they got to go into an extreme winter where, like right now, if we had this type of weather for just say 3-4 weeks straight, you know, those deer would be drastically suffering. Yeah. Do you want to do, not to interrupt, but let's do our commercial and then we'll get into the story, because it'll relate to this cold weather. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. So we have, what do we have? Right at this point, we have one brand. And so if you are looking at, I know the seasons are over, right? But that doesn't mean you can't take advantage of some of the savings that Code Blue Sense currently has going on. Go to their website, take a look at some of the new packages and offerings that they have. Like, how many mock scrapes do you run this year, or did you run this year?
I think I had 10.
10? You had?
Yeah.
Dude, that's a lot of mock scrapes. That's way more than I have. I think I had like 4 total across all my farms.
Yeah, so I got into the rope thing. Well, it was before Code Blue had the Rope-A-Dope kit, but when they came out with this Rope-A-Dope kit, it was, to me, the answer, because I was always using something to put on the ropes, and the fact that they sell it in a kit, and now they have like these two packs, and so it was easy, and I would use it. I would use the rope kit and these scrapes more so to get them away from, you know, a lot of these field edges have several branches, you know, that are hanging over, and they can make multiple scrapes. So I would go by and I would trim those up so they weren't as much of a magnet to these deer.
Right.
And then I would put in the rope, and it literally, I mean, changes the way you hunt, but it changes the way deer move and interact, but it also changes your inventory of deer. I mean, if you could put a camera on that, to me, it's just, it's fun, you know, and so I can go into that story here after we're done with this about, I moved some cameras around and did some stuff with that this week too. So,
oh, nice. Well, that's awesome, dude. Because the way I look at it, like they have the new packages now where it just becomes more affordable for to buy the mock scrape, because they're coming in multi packages now. They're coming with not only the mock scrape kits, but they're coming out with other scents and like the, oh, I had it on my table. What is it? Do I have it? No, I think I used it. It's like the grave digger. You sprinkle it onto the scrape that you create. And then once it gets wet and absorbs into the dirt, it puts off a scent, and then the deer come to that as well. So it's like a real authentic, you know, it's just not only the urine in the scrape, but also the preorbital gel from the, on the rope as well. So it just more realistic. So right. If you want to find out more information about all the products that we're talking about here, go to codebluescents.com. Take a look at their real and synthetic deer urines, take a look at the mock scrape kits, the scent elimination products, everything, and then use the discount code NFC. No, no, wait, I'm sorry. The discount code is HTH20 for 20% off. All right.
So
fill me in.
I'm gonna go with the scrapes and the cameras first, and then I got a story about this cold weather and wrapping up Illinois. So back to the rope-a-dope kits and having multiple. I mean, there's a couple spots where I have two rope kits within 50, 60 yards of each other just because of the way the terrain lays out and the deer use it. So using like these Code Blue scents and pairing it with the trail camera, I was able to, here at home, look back at pictures. And so my son and I had freshened scrapes up on October 26th, and then activity just ramped up. And so I had one cell camera and one regular camera, SD camera, on these scrapes. And I didn't happen to check that regular camera until just this past weekend. And lo and behold, so between October 27th and November 3rd, 4th, I would say would be the last of it. I had seven different bucks hitting two different scrapes. And now keep in mind, this is on a little finger, 5-acre piece of property that connects to where I live. And the biggest of which, I mean, is probably 145-inch 10-point. And he was all over that scrape the day after that we freshened these scrapes up. So yeah, I did some camera adjusting. I freshened up batteries. I moved directions of the cameras instead of, you know, because as the sun starts to change, you know, your camera will get triggered by the sun and the sunset and everything. And so I started changing some of the angles, and I haven't really seen too much, you know. So I hadn't gotten excited about going out this past weekend to wrap up the season. But I was sitting here Saturday night, and my brother texts me a picture and says, bloody arrow. And I, you know, normally when it's something like that, I said, well, okay, so you filled the freezer, you know, shot a doe and whatever. And so then he's like, no, it's a 8-point. And so he's hunting on our 10, 11 acre farm that we own across from his house. And I said, well, you need a hand? And he says, yeah, I might actually. And so, okay. And it had just started to snow most of the afternoon, just flurry stuff, but it was accumulating enough.
Right.
So my son and I bundled up and we headed over there and met him at his truck and got the whole story. You know, it was, so he had seen like 15 deer. The does were just piling out. And then this buck piled out with, I think he said like three or four other smaller bucks. And he said right away, he's like, I knew which deer it was. I had passed him during the season. But I was looking and he had a broken hip and his whole leg was just like flopping in the wind basically. And he was dragging it. So he's the last deer to come out. And, you know, he's like, I elected to shoot him because I could tell he was not in good health. He'd lost so much body weight and everything. Coyotes would, weather would get to him something. So he made a 20 yard shot. He thought he hit a corn stalk because he came into a standing cornfield and the deer run off about 50 to 60 yards, kind of slowed up. And then he just walked off into the woods. And he said, so I got down. He said, I saw all the blood and everything. I walked over to where I saw him re-enter our woods. And he says, then I jumped him. He says, so then I came back and that's when I got a hold of you. And so I said, well, let's catch up with the blood. This is an hour later now. And so we catch up with the blood and everything. And we walk for quite a while and we get the neighbor's permission because this is a narrow, skinny piece. I mean, keep in mind, this is the small, this is one of the things with the small hunting properties that you have to consider in, in knowing your neighbors and everything. And this guy's super cool. He lets us go over and we track it on and then we track him back to ours. And then we get on coyote tracks with the deer tracks and the blood and everything. And then we jump the buck again. or the coyote did or something, because we were that close within, like, those were fresh coyote tracks. As it's snowing, you could see, like, it was happening right then and there. Mm-hmm. And as this buck gets up, he sprints through the woods and he rips off his right antler. It goes flying. And then he goes down into a drainage, and he pretty much, that's it. And so then we get up to him and I'm like, oh, he's a nice looking deer. You know, he had real wide set brows, tall brows, mm-hmm. probably a three-year-old, but yeah, you could take his hoof and like literally wrap it around the backside of him. I mean, it was busted down in the knuckle. His leg wasn't
even connected.
Not yeah. really. It was like snapped at his knee, but then like his hip was broke too. And so then I go to grab him to drag him and I rip the other antler off. So then we're dragging him out to the field and my brother's like, dude, you're so much faster. Why don't you just gut him? And then, you know, we'll go from there. We can get out of here. Cause it was getting cold. I mean,
yeah.
So I start to gut him. And as I'm gutting him, I look at the leg that's broken. I look at his hip and he had a puncture in him about the size of like what a G2 or something antler would be. And so he must've got gored like right on the inside of his pelvis there. And that must've been what broke it. So
really?
Yeah.
Couldn't have been like a shotgun slug or something like that, you don't think?
The angle of where it was, and there was no exit, like on the outside, yeah. You know, on the outside of his body, there was no hole. It was on the inside like that. Like maybe a buck came in and like hit the inside of his pelvis and like crushed right through. But either way, this deer had lost, and we had pictures of this deer first, second week of December. It looked healthy yeah. as can be. So, I mean, this was a wound from December 11th to now, that pretty much was going to take this deer out. So, yeah. So he put some meat in the freezer and that was two bucks that my son and his buck were two that we took off of that property this year. And so it was a good end of Illinois season. So,
yeah. So, you got a buck and you guys got some more freezer meat.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Here's my question. And I think this is a really good, like, mini topic for today, and that is, you're in a tree stand. Me and you are, let me start from this beginning. Depending on what your goals are for the season, and you, whether you're trying to fill the freezer with any deer or you're trying to take that next step and maybe stair step up to bigger bucks every year, let's say me and you, we're kind of after the top tier bucks on a farm.
Right.
Like that's right. Where like I live on a sliding scale. So I'm always going after the top tier bucks. And then after that, if I'm not getting close to them, I'm like a tag filler now. I kind of want to fill my tag. So I'm okay with sliding off of those top tier bucks and shooting something different. With that right. said, where do you stand on injured deer coming in front of you at shooting range? Do you feel it is a hunter's responsibility to ethically take that deer's life so that we can, so it doesn't suffer, knowing it could possibly die?
I think that is probably the best solution to it. I mean, it's ethics is everything. What if you're a good, there's so many words I could use for it, but if you're a good hunter, it doesn't stop with just being successful, right? So being a good hunter means being good, a good neighbor. It means introducing young or friends or whatever into the sport of hunting. It means being an advocate for hunting. It also means being being a conservationist. You know, so to make that decision in the tree stand, it should be a no-brainer. I mean, if you see a sick animal, if you see a wounded animal, I think that's part of your duty is a tag holder, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're eating tag soup, you know, or you're shooting a wounded deer, I mean, think of it that way too, because how many guys maybe go empty and where they could have done justice for an animal?
Right. Are you doing that on a basket rack? I mean, it's different in Illinois, right? In Illinois, you get two tags. In Iowa, I get two tags too, but one of them has to be a firearms tag. And I don't, like this year, I didn't participate in any firearm seasons. So a 90-inch buck, 50-inch buck comes by, and now I have to have an internal debate of whether or not I want to fill my tag, because you still got to waste your tag, not waste it, but, you know, you still have to put that tag on whatever you shoot. So I got a really badly injured deer walk by my tree stand, and I've been in the scenarios before where it's the first week in November, and it looked to me like this deer had been hit by a car on his right. On his rear end, and he was having trouble staying up. And I passed him because I didn't want to fill my tag on that particular deer. Is that like a, and so I've had these internal conversations with myself where it's like, is it my responsibility to finish this deer off and ethically remove him? Or is this just me accepting that nature is brutal? And, you know, I've also seen does or young does that have been attacked by a coyotes. I mean, hell, it could have been dogs, where their entire back end was bloody. And you could tell that a group of dogs or coyotes had gotten to this deer, and somehow it got away, but it wasn't going to survive.
Right.
And I don't know.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm looking at the picture of my brother's buck here, and he was adamant he was going to let this deer grow another year. And he's a 3.5-year-old deer. So, I mean, there's so many people that would gladly shoot that buck, you know? Right. So, I mean, to me, you know, when we talk, you know, 50, 80 inches, whatever this deer may be, the trophy isn't always, you know, the inches. And that was what my brother, that was what I finally got out of that on Saturday. Was he texted me back later that night and said, you know, some of the greatest memories have been with some of our smallest deer or some of our smaller deer, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not always the inches. It's not always the age. It's not, you know, so I mean, your story of shooting a wounded deer might turn into something that another person uses as, hey, you know, next time I'm in the trees.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
And I see a buck that's wounded or a doe that's wounded or missing half of its hide and looks like it's getting an infection or something, you know, maybe you just taught them a lesson. And I think that's where I go back to, like, being a quote unquote good hunter. It doesn't stop with just being successful.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's something that, on the other hand, I have shot a doe because where I hunt, I can get as many doe tags as I want. Right. There's no, in the county that I live in, I can't get additional doe tags. So I've had in the past where the one specific example was an arrow basically opened up the guts of this doe, and I was walking, you know, she was walking in front of me, and just like, it was probably the previous night on a neighboring property, just her guts were hanging out, right? Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I shot her, and then I tagged her, but I didn't use any of the meat from that doe because you don't know.
Right.
You don't know how long she's been alive. You don't know how, if there's infection or sepsis that's been introduced to the bloodstream. When I got up to her, she stunk really bad, like infection and guts and things like that. And I shot her. I called her in, I used my tag on that deer, but I also let her sit right where she died. And I didn't take any of the meat off of it, And so that could potentially, that could potentially go against the rule of the law. And I'm guessing I should have probably, this was maybe 7 years ago, I probably should have removed her from the woods, but I didn't. Right.
Yeah.
I ended her life faster than her getting eaten alive by coyotes. The result was the coyotes that eat her, and the coyotes still ate her, but I was the one that killed her and ended her suffering.
Are you going to have more buyer's remorse by shooting a wounded deer or by shooting a smaller buck?
Yeah, I don't know. Because here's the thing, like, we put a lot of time and energy into, I mean, we're not putting out the number of trail cameras that we're putting out. You're not planning the food plots specifically. Like, if you were only a doe hunter, or the bucks in the United States only grew, the max that a deer ever grew was an 80-inch 8-pointer. People are not doing what they're doing today for 80-inch 8-pointers.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
And so you're planning food plots to try to attract the biggest deer possible. I'm putting out cellular trail cameras and hunting weeks on end to try to get the biggest buck possible.
Right.
And so we're making decisions off antler size and age class. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and now I'm going to go back to this whole small parcels or small properties. Take a look at your phone. I sent you two of the pictures of my brother's deer. Now, keep in mind, this is the second time he's seen this buck, but this is only the second biggest buck he saw all year in the tree stand. To me, I mean, you almost have to be a judge of, like, what does your property produce anyways? Like, going back to the small properties, you got to hunt within your means, So that's a whole nother topic, but as far as being ethical or being a good hunter, I think you make the shot, whether it's a fawn, a doe, a buck, now the gray area with all of it would be, hypothetically, say we're out in Nebraska and there's a mule deer that has 1 4-inch, tine sticking out of its head. Well, that's not technically a legal buck, but what if wounded?
Yeah. Yeah, man, if I'm in another state on public property or on other private, I am following laws to a T, and there's no, like, ethics to me come second if I'm out of state.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm in Iowa and there's been times where I've had conversations before with conservation officers and I've said, hey, listen, here's what I got going on. And they're like, just shoot the deer, tag it, whatever. Right. Or a deer has been caught in a fence.
Yep. We've had that.
And it's basically jumped it was a buck, or no, it was a doe, jumped this fence, didn't make it over. On her hips, the barbed wire was up in her hips and it had slowly sawed her up into her guts, and she wasn't going to live. Right. Call them up. The DNR officer told us to dispatch of the deer, any way that you feel comfortable. And, we let it sit right there. We did not tag it, but we did call and let them know, like, hey, we got a deer here. This is while we were shed hunting one year. It is mortally wounded. It's not going to survive. What would you like us to do with it? And we've done that with different conservation officers, and we've had conservation officers say, dispatch the animal. And we've also had conservation officers say, just let it be.
Let it be.
You know, and nature will take its course. And that way, if you get involved, like the second you get involved in something like that, there is potentially rumors that can start. One guy in your group goes out and starts, you know, and then the game of telephone happens where people say, oh, well, he killed an animal outside of season. You know, it goes from you killed an animal in the fence to you killed an animal outside of season. And the next thing you know, the rumor mill happens and now you're a poacher. Do you know?
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And although those types of things don't happen very often, I don't know. It's especially in my world where we create content and we have social media presence. The second that we skew outside of the law, even in ethics, is a dangerous place to be because we've broken the law.
Right.
And so I don't do anything anymore. Yeah. For me, so here's an example. My daughter pulled the trigger this year on a turkey, killed two of them with one trigger. We had one tag, one youth turkey tag. I could have, if I wanted to, taken my son's tag and put it on that turkey and all things are good, right? Uh-huh. Like we have a tag for her, but my daughter pulled the trigger once and shot two toms because they were close together.
Yep.
And so for me, what I do, and because we had pictures that we were going to take, you know, pictures, and I wanted to be able to tell the story on, tell the story on the podcast and stuff. I thought about if I didn't have the podcast, dude, it's done. Accidents happen. Most people are taking both turkeys, taking them to the house, tagging them. Accidents happen, then they forget about it. I went a different direction. I called the conservation officer. He thought about it for a little bit and he's like, I think the best thing to do is just follow the law to a T on this one. And I'm going to confiscate one of those turkeys from you. And that's what he did. He confiscated one. And I think he turned it into a locker that maybe is part of the donate
for hunger. You
know, hunger. Yeah. What he did with it after I gave it to him, I really didn't care about. All I know is that I wanted to do the right thing and show my kids what the right thing was. And that was to call the conservation officer and let them know what happened. Mm-hmm. And that was the right thing to do. So I don't know. It gets tricky out there, especially when you have laws that are not black and white. How far can, so in Nebraska, I'll take Nebraska for example. In the state of Nebraska, it says 200 yards. You cannot be 200 yards from a bait station or a mineral station. That's pretty black and white. That's measurable. Mm-hmm. In the state of Iowa, it's legal to bait, but you can't hunt over it. Like it's illegal, not necessarily to bait, but to feed deer.
Right.
You can feed deer, but you can't hunt over it, and you can't hunt on any trails leading to it. If that food source that you've put out there makes deer come to it or alters their natural, whatever natural is, their natural movement throughout, then that's illegal in the state of Iowa. But there's no numbers associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so a DN officer has the right to say whether you are or are not. It's very gray. So they can say, oh, no, you're good. Or they could say 500 yards away, they could follow a trail up to a mineral site that you've had. So you got to be very careful of where you're hunting and what type of things you're using when the law has gray areas like that.
Well, I think what a gray area law does is it weeds out dishonest people. I mean, if you think about it, when you're going to get caught in something, it's because you deliberately were trying something, you know, right. And whether that's a gray law or not, I think the gray portion of that is what actually proves the guilt faster than somebody just, you know, poaching and not following the law.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I would say I agree with you there. However, I'll give you an example from the past. Okay. I got a big buck on trail camera about 12 years ago, and I was heavily hunting this deer. And so was another guy who knew about it, right? And so I was hunting, it was 40 acres that was surrounded by a horseshoe property that was on the outskirts of it. So there, I was hunting a 40, and I think it was 160 acres that were horseshoed around this property. Well, that property had cattle on it in certain parts of it. And there was a mineral block, a salt block for these cattle, right? I didn't know about that cattle, but the other guy did. And I was hunting on, it would have been like the eastern side of this property, and there the deer would come in from the north, from the 160, come onto this property, and then kind of work. They would do one of two things. They would go straight south and cross a road and go to ag, or they would come into this pasture and eat the grass, depending on whatever they wanted for their food. Well, I got the DNR officer called on me because the other hunter was saying that I was hunting on a trail leading to this mineral block that I really didn't know about. I mean, if I would have stopped and thought about it and was like, oh, there's cattle in there, there's got to be a salt block in there, whatever the case is. And the DNR officer was like, I go, man, I'll be honest, I had no idea this mineral block was here. I even got to the point where I was just like, dude, you got to do what you got to do, right? You either write me up or you don't write me up. But I don't hunt on this property. I hunt on this property, and on this property, there's no minerals, there's no baiting, there's nothing, right?
All right.
And so I didn't get a ticket. He was just like, hey man, this cattle operation, it is what it is. And I mean, he's like, I can't tell you where to hunt or how to hunt. Right. He's just like, just be aware that that's deer are altered. Their movement is altered because of that. And so he was lenient with me about about that stuff, but they're lenient with a lot of people.
Well, and so go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I was just like, I can't control what happens on any other property. I can only control where I hunt and if there's any altered deer movement on this 40 acres that I hunt. And so there's, and this is Iowa, right? And there's Illinois and Nebraska and Missouri and any Midwestern state, there is mineral on the ground for livestock that alters deer movement, and
all over
the place. So it's just like, if hunters really followed those rules to a T, they would be hunting in such small corners of properties that they're like agriculture, whether it is a salt block or farming practices, it alters deer. So, well, again, it all comes down to what you want to do.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Yeah, and if you associated like the distance thing with some of these properties, there's a lot of these properties that would simply just become unhuntable.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, you could be that guy that hunts, you know, this 10-acre piece, and now all of a sudden it's narrow, skinny, whatever, and if somebody is got a cattle operation or whatever. I don't know, man. You got some bad neighbors when some of that stuff goes down like that, especially if it's after a target animal, you know?
Yeah. I want to ask you a question about the state of Michigan right now. They at one point, and this is two guys who don't live there, so take what we say with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, we're just talking about it right now.
Right.
Okay. The state of Michigan used to be a 100% bait state. You used to be able to bait. Ohio is a bait state. There's some other states that are fairly close to us that allow baiting. But for the most part, like Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Missouri, I think those are all no bait states. Indiana is not a bait state, I don't think. Ohio is. Kentucky is. Pennsylvania. Yeah. I don't think is. But anyway, what I'm getting at is everybody's on social media, the talking heads, like what we're doing, are talking about, oh, baiting is bad. Baiting is bad. Baiting is bad. We shouldn't get baiting. However, there's a law right now that is trying to get baiting passed in Michigan again. Well,
okay.
There's like a lot of people are supporting it. Right. And so there's a handful of people are like, oh, baiting's horrible. But there's a lot of hunters who also, number one, have never stopped baiting because of the law that was passed and actually do support it. So it's crazy to me, especially on the social media side of things, where you start to see a group of people saying, oh, baiting is bad. Baiting is horrible. Here's what it's doing. But then you have another big group of people in a specific state saying, I don't give a shit. I want baiting in my state. I feel that on my property, I should be able to do whatever I want. It's almost like a freedom thing.
Yeah, man, it's so hard to say, you know, like we can go down the road of the baiting. I could sit here and say, so I have a pond at my house. If I look out the window, it's an acre and a half pond. I could say those are my fish in that pond, right? I'm the one who bought them and stocked it and all that. Not according to the DNR, you know? So, I mean, if it just because it's your property, does it mean that those are your deer to manage? Those are your deer to bait? To me, I don't want to go down the road of like, what's the difference between baiting and a food plot? But just as there's good food plot products, there's good baiting products, right? Mm-hmm. There's some that have certain minerals and proteins in them that actually help the herd and are herd healthy stuff. And talk to a lot of guys that do that research and man, there are benefits to it. Now in hindsight, I don't know how much research or you've seen with baiting, but it changes deer movement. You know, and I think sometimes it's in a negative way too, where these deer become nocturnal.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think planting a food plot and dumping a bag of corn or a bait pile or a feeder are two in the same? Are they the same thing?
The only thing I could say that's different about it is, so planting a food plot, they have to work a little bit more for the food versus going to a station or a designated spot. And the other thing with a food plot is whatever's left over generally always gets, you know, tilled under, dissed under, burnt off or whatever. In bait stations, from what the way I've seen them, you know, salts, minerals and all that stuff, a lot of it gets absorbed into the ground. So it never really goes away for periods of time. You know, I one time years ago, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, I always heard guys talk about like salt licks and mineral licks and stuff. And they'd put these salt blocks out and 7 years, that mineral would still be in the soil. You know, deer would be pawing at it and it looked like you could park a car in it. And why? And it was just because they took and refreshed the salt block every so often.
Yep.
So, it's a little different, but it's also a little gray too. Mm-hmm. You know, the bait station is going to be put in one spot. A food plot goes over an area. So it's not like you can pinpoint exactly where the deer might come out or feed, and they have to work for it. But I still think there's something that you are feeding the deer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes back to the why is the bait being put down on the ground? So deer come into it. Why right. is the food plot down on the ground? So deer come into it.
Right.
And so, yes, it's concentrated. And yes, it becomes easier. I don't know. Like, it's easier. It's more affordable. It's easier for the deer to get to. But it's also, if you plan a food plot, it's not how much easier it is for you. It's a deer goes to a clover plot, puts its head down, and eats. That's right. easy for a deer. A right. deer can do the same exact thing on a pile of corn or right. carrots or sugar beets or whatever people throw down. So these are a lot of things that I've been thinking about lately.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and especially let's go into the crossbow thing, right? Mm-hmm. If people of the state that whatever this law is in want that, they should be able to vote on it and say, you know what? Yes, we do want crossbows. And yes, we do want baiting. That should be up to the people of the state. Yes, I do strongly feel that the DNR should play a huge role in what weapons should and should not be used, whether baiting should or should not be illegal, based off of data that they have collected from like research on how those two things impact the deer. Mm-hmm. I live in Iowa, and overwhelmingly the people who live in Iowa do not want crossbows, right? So I'm not going to say anything else other than I live in a state where a majority of the hunters do not want crossbows in the archery season. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the only thing. Now, if all of a sudden, and I don't want crossbows.
Okay.
And I have a group of people that support that. And then we come together on that end. But if all of a sudden 60, 70% of the people in the state of Iowa want crossbows in the archery season, well, they should be able to vote on it, give their opinions. The DNR should come in and say, okay, is this acceptable? Yes or no? And then there needs to be alternate conversations. And I think really it is about freedoms, certain freedoms. Like majority should win, but the majority should only win if the science supports that it is an oak, that it will not impact the natural resource on a variety of different levels.
Well, it definitely has to be evidence-backed. I mean, yeah. last week I talked a little bit about some of the conservation topic when I was looking into the Illinois stuff. And this we'll go into that later in another episode. But there's so many lobbyists and stuff that are getting paid through farm bureaus or insurance companies and stuff. And how much of that is evidence-backed? I don't know. I tend to lean the other way, and there's not a lot of conservation idea that goes behind that. That's more or less herd reduction. We need the numbers down. We don't want the insurance claims type deal. As far as like going back to the food plots, you know, obviously every year we put in food plots, and our mindset is not to, I want to make my shot easier, or I'm going to make this food plot so the deer come into this destination. Mm-hmm. Our idea of it is we want to give the deer something like they have right now. You know, we got cold temperatures. We either get a snowpack or whatever. All the neighboring farms are down. We have food left over for them. And that helps them get into the next season. It helps these does have their fawns. It also does help in antler development. I mean, the more nutrition and more protein and stuff these deer get, the bigger they get.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that baiting or feeding deer in certain areas is a bad idea. Now, the correlation where maybe I would throw a wrench into it would be, is there any correlation with diseases and concentrated piles?
Right. Right. And that's a question that can only be answered by the science.
Right.
You know what I mean? By does... And that's where there's a lot of, this is where I get a little frustrated. There's been millions and millions of dollars donated and funding for CWD research over the course of the last 10 years. And there's groups of people who are like, CWD is absolutely horrible. There's also another opposing group that's like, CWD has been around forever. It's a bad thing. But there's been no headway with that millions of dollars of research. It's just CWD is a thing that deer get. It can, and here's what it does. But there's been no more additional knowledge gained, I don't think, that says you should or shouldn't bait, right? Or that the baiting or the concentration of deer in a certain place, because deer are social, let's use Iowa, for example. Let's say there's a horrific, or let's just even use Wisconsin. Wisconsin has probably been hit. When I mean hit by CWD, I mean CWD has come in. They slaughtered the deer herd in certain areas, killed all of them, wiped out a lot. And then now they're coming back, but CWD is still there. Right. And so are they going to tell farmers, hey, no more cattle salt blocks on the landscape because CWD, right?
Right. Right.
No, they're not going to tell you. You think a farmer's going to listen to that shit? No.
Yeah.
Right. No. And so I just feel a lot of money has been spent on CWD research without a ton of headway per se. Yeah. And so I'd like to find out more about that. Actually, I don't have the answers for that, but I'd like to find out more about it.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus, powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Yeah, I 100% agree here. I live in a CWD county, and I think 1, 2, 3, 4 of the counties that I've hunted in northern northwest Illinois, they are CWD counties. Where they got the number to quantify each of these counties as a CWD county, and where they got the numbers to, like, DNR comes in and they have to wipe out so many percent of the deer in these counties, I don't know. Have I seen a CWD deer? Yes, I have. Was it while I was hunting? Nope, it wasn't. And it was on a highway, and the deer was there all week long in the same exact spot. And I knew it because it was a buck. Did it affect him? Yes, it did. Has it affected?
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Yep.
How do you know it was a CWD deer, not an EHD deer, and not a deer that has been injured by something else?
Yes. Very good question. I mean, you know, so in my mind, the county we were in that I would drive through to go back and forth to work, there was me and two guys that would take the same trip into work. And this deer was there from Monday to Friday, you know, and we watched him, and I'm like, oh, that's a good looking buck on Monday. So we drove up by him. And I mean, we're literally a stone throw away from him, and he didn't care. Every single day after that, you know, but we just watched his body deplete. But to your point, this is off of a major highway, you know, but the county that we were driving through was like the number one county in Illinois at the time for CWD. So my assumption was, and he was by one of the rivers, which they claim it ran up and down this river, and any deer associated with that river was ending up with CWD. This is, oh gosh, Dan, this is probably 20 years ago now, you know, so I don't know. I assumed it was a CWD deer, but it could have been a deer that got hit. He's wounded, or he had EHD, or maybe he was just sick.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, I want to say, I can remember supporting CWD research and supporting all of it and just being like, okay, let the science talk. Let the science lead us to legislation, right? Mm-hmm. Let us do that. And it's difficult because I don't know if it necessarily has or not. Right. Deer live with it. Some deer live with it their entire life. Some deer just seem to be like humans, right? Some people mm-hmm. are more susceptible to colds and flus, while others have a stronger immune system and they're able to fight shit off, right?
Yeah.
I think this is something like that. That's my gut feeling. I don't know. I'm not a doctor or a veterinarian or a science or a biologist or anything like that. So it's just things that I think about a lot.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, unfortunately, how bad is it really? Yeah, unfortunately, I think, you know, you're hitting it right there, kind of surrounding it. But, you know, as a society, you know, anytime there's like an outbreak or whatever, there's always that one group or that one person or somebody that has to benefit from it somehow, right? So that's when it gets really blown out of proportion. And do we really know why? You know, so back to your original statement with CWD, what has been the research that's been done, what has been made of it? What are the remedies going forward? I mean, we could go into flus and all that stuff. What's happened? Where are we? Are we any better? Are we any healthier? You know, so yeah. I don't know.
I just know that the more you start messing with Mother Nature, the worse things get. I mean, yes. just look at humans' impact on all species of all animals, plants, and wildlife. I mean, just look at I think we should use this multiflower rose bush to create lines so that it would act as fencing. Now, guess what? Right. An invasive species is all over North America because of that idea. Plants, like a whole bunch of different, you know, invasive species throughout that and throughout the United States, just on the plant level. And then mm-hmm. we have things like, hey, let's introduce this to fix this, or let's change this to fix this. And then what happens is it makes things worse or it skews something so far in one direction that it starts to overwhelm. I mean, I lived in the South for a period of time, and those vines, what is it, kudzu or whatever,
yeah.
that invasive species vines that grows so fast and it kills trees and other natural native vegetation that are there, that's there.
Yep.
And it's just an ongoing, I mean, down in the swamps of Louisiana, there's an invasive species in the water that blocks the rivers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so they have to try to, they fight that all the time. Well, and the more humans get involved, it just seems like the bigger mess everything becomes.
100%. We were watching a hunting show the other day on TV, and we've been watching a lot of South Dakota mule deer hunts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's spots where the yucca plants are just everywhere. And the same thing like with Nebraska and everything. And the kids were asking, like, what is that? I'm like, that's a yucca plant. And so me, obviously being in landscaping, people plant these in their landscape, you know, and then couple years go by and they're like, these things are terrible. They're invading everywhere. I can't get them out. And, you know, we'll go back and we'll dig them out or whatever their landscape. 2 years will go by and there's another yucca growing, you know, mm-hmm. like talk about invasive species, you know, and what we do as humans, like, oh, I want to put this here. And then it's destroyed. Yeah, just a little side note. I guess back to the ultimate question, you know, or what we were saying, I think there has to be more within each state or more within each region to dictate or to at least have a say on whether it's mm-hmm. baiting or whether it's crossbows or whether it's lengthening or shortening seasons. And I think that has to be something that we have a bigger voice in than what we actually do.
Yeah. And I think, and this is my opinion, the people who should make those decisions is a connection with the hunters and the Department of Natural Resources who should make those decisions.
Right.
I personally don't feel that any farm bureau or any
lobbyist,
or any group like that that's business or financially motivated should be making decisions for the natural resource, whether that's a deer hunting season or whether that's conservation of wetlands or whatever the case. So that's my opinion. I don't want to say like, I'm just anti people who have other interests involved other than the benefit of the natural resource, if that makes sense. So,
I mean, and a lot of that is literally just so they can benefit for themselves. And that's kind of what I was alluding to. You know, I mean, I don't want to get into it, but any of the flus and stuff, you know, all of a sudden magically there's a drug or whatever that you need to take. Well, okay. I mean, we know where that ends up. So
yeah,
I think the best interest for us as hunters, and then to wrap this thing full circle, you know, you see a wounded deer, you shoot the wounded deer, you put the tag on it. I think you did a great thing there for all hunters. You know, you're a good model there. But then I think as the seasons wind down, like now, I think this is when we need to have our input. You know, like, Dan, what did you see as far as deer numbers? How many days did you hunt? You know, how many mature bucks did you see? Mm-hmm. That's when this intel needs to be put together and then make changes for the next however many seasons going forward. You know, if it's a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, because I mean, we've seen firsthand, like going out to Nebraska where, you know, we were allowed 2 tags over the counter, and then we pretty much decimated their mule deer herd, and Mother Nature.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep. And was last week, this is kind of like a 2-part series now, because I think it was last week's episode titled Getting Involved. What is that?
It was the conservationist. Definition of conservation.
Yeah.
I don't remember what you titled it, but.
Right. Yeah. So I think this kind of elaborates on getting involved, and it all comes, like, we talk a little bit about ethics and disease. We talk about, you know, what you should and should not do as a hunter. And I think this is kind of just it almost felt like a follow-up episode compared to what we did last week. So I would say, you know, continuously get involved. If some of these things are important to you and you do want to get involved, that's fine. You know, go to your meetings, do research on the topics that interest you. But the other thing I want to say, Jason, is I think it's okay to just be a hunter as well.
Okay.
Like, I feel like, in my opinion, if you just want to go out and hunt and just follow the rules and regulations, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't want to get involved, there's nothing wrong with that, because not everybody can get involved.
No,
but you know, and not everybody has the time. Like, I can remember back in the day when hunting used to be a show up, hunt, be done with hunting. Everybody's happy. Now I just feel like we're nowhere close to that anymore. Everybody's got opinions, but nobody does shit about it. They just bitch.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? 100%. I mean, that's what it is. It's all organizations, whether they claim they're non-for-profit or whatever. There's all these organizations and all these, you know, informees, if you will. Right. And what does that do? I mean, because at the end of the day, if you, you know, stepped aside and just went and hunted, are you hunting any different than you were 25 years ago? Are you hunting any different, you personally, if you're advocating for somebody or if you're just doing you right now? I mean, does that change for you?
Right. I feel you, man. I feel you. And this is a great place to shut her down. Huge shout out to our partner over at Code Blue Sense. Go check out codebluesense.com. Also, do us a huge favor. We have started the YouTube channel. We're trying to get subscribers there as well, because our goal is to put out some additional video clips there throughout the course of the winter and summer and spring, and talk a little bit about some of the extra stuff that goes on, more than just deer hunting, some how we're going to put up our mock scrapes, maybe how we tune our bows, what our bow setups look like, and really get more into the how-to part of this to keep, you know, because that's what this title of this podcast is, how-to. And so I think with upcoming episodes, we're going to talk about how to do certain things, break it down even into very small detailed things, how to tune your bow, how to set up this, how to set up that. And I think as we get into that, we're going to have a lot more fun, and you guys are going to get exactly what you want out of this podcast. Go to the How to Hunt Deer YouTube channel, subscribe. Please go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you guys download this this podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. Let us know that we are not only educational but entertaining as well. And if you guys have any questions or want to voice your opinions, go to the How to Hunt Deer Instagram page and leave us a message. Follow us there as well, and we will definitely get in contact with you or respond to your questions. So, Jason, any final thoughts?
Not too much. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.